You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
See, if you win the game, we let the song play.
Don't punish me next time.
Welcome to another episode of Bison Report Radio, emanating from the beautiful Bison Report studios here in Horace, North Dakota. Joining me live in said studio after a good 80 minutes of just nonsense, Mr. Zach Willis. Zach, how are you?
I'm great. Like I said, don't short me of my sweet loving.
That's, yeah, I get it.
I didn't lose a football game. No, you didn't.
We're not going to do UND Redux part two. We're going
to... Listen, yeah. If we lose to them again within the next calendar year, I'm not going to be producing content because of it. I'll tell you that much.
All right, let's dive into the news here. Joe Stuffel actually gets injured scoring a touchdown, which is something.
Those falls are always nasty.
Yeah.
Like where they get their arms wrapped up and like it, you know, I have no idea what happened, but like you always assume collarbone, like that thing always snaps in that position. So
yeah. And I think Ant said, you know, I mean, he has just declared guys out for the season before. So I don't think that's the case, right? I think he would have, if something truly terrible had happened to Joe, I think Ants would have just said something different. But, I mean, we'll talk about it, but another game, home game, not a game NDSU really projected to have a chance at losing. So I think there's a real opportunity, a real chance here for him not to maybe need to go.
Which, but I'm fine with,
yeah. Yeah. And honestly, you know, what we saw out of Carson Williams, but man, you know, Finn Diggins, Strite, like there's plenty of guys that can get reps at the tight end position.
Yeah.
Little Zen can get more reps. I'm good with a lot of it if they want to not roll Stuffel out there as 30 plus point favorites, but we'll get into that later. Same thing with Wiz. Sounds like he did some return to play stuff, and there's young safeties that can get reps as far as I'm concerned. So yeah. I'm cool with that. However, that kind of shakes out as well. One interesting bit of news, NDSU left out of the top 10 in the playoff rankings. You know, we took a lot of flack, or I did, I guess, as the person who runs the Bison Report Twitter account. But, you know, during whatever game it was after the USD loss, things are starting to run together. But
Missouri State.
Yeah, Missouri State. And, you know, I tweeted there aren't seven better teams in the country. And I still actually believe that, despite losing to UND. You know, and frankly, I would guess that I probably believe that five of the top eight teams in the country play in the Valley. And maybe that's bias. It probably is. But, you know, just as a whole, like I bet if you look, and I will here because it's really good radio while I look up stuff, but NDSU is still probably pretty darn high up in like the computer rankings. You look at Sagarin and South Dakota State is the number one 2A team. Montana State is number two. NDSU is number three.
Right.
So the nerds still think we're the third best team in the country. I'm kind of with them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand that NDSU has two losses. Then you've got Idaho there and SIU, UND, Northern Iowa. I mean, guess what? The nerds think the Valley is way better than everybody else, too.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, me kind of expecting NDSU to drop another game this year.
Right.
And still sort of feeling kind of the way that I do. I mean, I think, you know, you look at who, you know, was in those spots. I think some bad stuff would happen to Western Carolina if they
right.
got together with the Bison. I kind of feel the same way about Furman. I definitely feel the same way about Delaware. And you and I aren't completely sold on the Idaho of it all.
I'd like a, I mean, I'd take us in a rematch against USD if you're going to even talk yeah. about Valley right. schools that are ranked ahead of us. But I don't know. It's, we mentioned it earlier of like, you can call us homers or whatever you want. And look, I'd love for there to be parity. I want to see Furman
yeah.
make a deep. That's cool. I always like seeing different teams in there. But there's been a lot of Missouri Valley and Big Sky involvement in Frisco in the last 10 years. Yeah. So until yep. I'm proven otherwise, I'm just not going to think that there's a better conference than that.
And we even mentioned, you know, I think once the initial punch in the gut part of it got over, like I really felt like on that day, NDSU ran out of time against USD.
Sure.
I did not feel like they ran out of time against UND.
I thought you were going to make that point for the UND game.
No.
I was like, all right.
No. You know, and I think yeah. based on the rankings and based on those, like, if UND, and this is going to blow people's mind because of what everybody saw. Like, I got to tell you, if UND played NDSU tomorrow on a neutral field, NDSU is going to be favored.
Yeah.
And you can think of that, whatever you want to think of that. But it's the reality of the situation. NDSU did not run out of time. They got their ass kicked in Grand Forks. I'm sorry.
Right.
That's what happened. But the point I'm trying to make is, as I said after USD, if NDSU plays USD 10 times, they win 8, and they happen to lose that, you know, that the 2 out of 10 happened. It happened. So anyway, that's sort of a whatever. It is a little concerning, though, because, you know, I think NDSU is going to win here, get to 6-2, and they've stopped updating those rankings, like, weekly, right?
Which ones?
The top 10 for the FCS playoff.
I think so. Otherwise, it's just the stats, the
yeah, I don't know,
coaches' polls, whatever, but it's that's the part where, like, obviously, it's the coach speaker, like, it doesn't matter until Thanksgiving yeah. weekend of where you're right. set in the playoffs, right. but when, like, this official poll is not tracked, or, like, maybe it seems like they're trying to appease different conferences, it's like you're actually messing with seeding. And
yeah,
look, if we're in the bottom half, I would feel pretty good about us going to play any of those top 10 teams.
And I mean, my thing is, you know, I think they're going to go to 6-2, and I think they're going to go 2-1 after that. I think this team personally is going to go 8-3. Now, they go down to Brookings and win, I might change my tune.
Buy the plane tickets to Texas.
Because that's the big one, you yeah. know. But I think if they do go down to Brookings and lose, I personally do believe they'll win that home game against SIU and then go to UNI, probably needing a win, or very much wanting a win.
Yeah.
And I think an 8-3 NDSU team probably does grab a 7 or 8 seed. Maybe. I don't know. But this would almost tell you maybe not.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're where we are in the season, and if you're anticipating another loss for the Bison, which at this time I am, I don't know if an 8-3 team is seeded.
Yeah, which is crazy to think about. And, like, obviously considering that third loss being to who it would be.
Yeah.
But, like, the way I could just imagine it shaking out is, and it's hard to say this because of what they've put on tape so far, but, like, SCSU losing this weekend to USD, and then us losing to SCSU,
yeah.
that diminishes our resume even more.
Right.
It's all just, again, it doesn't matter. You're going to play who you're going to play, but I'd rather play in Fargo in November and December. So,
yeah. Shout out to the lady who won her $150,000.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her. Love to see it. Love to see it.
She said, do a vacation and bolster retirement.
Bolster her retirement. I'd like to bolster my retirement.
That's what we're all trying to do.
Anyway. This week's episode of Bison Report Radio brought to you in part by Big Deck Barbecue. What do you got going on?
We're getting ready for Pride of Dakota season. It's basically around the clock time, which is good for me, but I'm sprinting right alongside the Bison here to the end of the year. So I'm strapping up, needing all the caffeine and sleep I can get. So if you're in We might be in Grand Forks, but if you're listening and you're in Sioux Falls, we'll be down there. We'll be in Fargo. We'll be in Bismarck. Come say hello. It's always good to obviously get out to the shop that I'll be locked in for the next 2 months.
You know, folks, just pay attention to Big Dick socials. Zach and his crew do a great job. So if they're going to be somewhere, it'll be public knowledge. They do a good job. They'll let you know where they're going to be.
You know why I'm here.
Yeah. It's Bison hoop season. We're a day before a basketball game, which just seems crazy to me. It seems like, not that long ago, I was leaving the Sanford Premier Center, thinking that, I was done, thinking that, I was going to move on to this coaching and development life and kind of hand off all the media stuff. And here we are back in the studio.
Yeah.
There you go. Bison basketball is coming back and hell of a run. I think they'd like it to end differently, obviously. You know, they've been the bridesmaid 3 straight years after winning it 2 straight years. They've been in the Summit League title game for 5 straight seasons, which, I mean, when you talk about a single elimination conference tournament in enemy territory, let's be real about that tournament.
It's like kind of crazy that location is where it is.
Sioux Falls is, great. The Premier Center is great. Both the Sheraton that's attached to the thing and where the real ones stay, which is at the Ramada with the pirate ship water park across the across the street.
Yeah.
With the Boss's Chicken and Pizza in house, by the way.
That is actually like your fantasy land.
Buddy.
Bring the trunks. Pizza, you're 12 years old again.
Bro, it's the best 4 days of the year. Anyway, that venue, it's perfect. Everything is perfect about it, except for the fact that it's 38 minutes from Brookings and it's like 55 minutes from Vermilion. That part of it is not perfect.
Yeah.
With that said, 5 consecutive Summit League tournament appearances or Summit League tournament championship game appearances. And they bring everybody back, except there was one guy from Devil's Lake, 6'11 NBA draft prospect. He's at the University of Alabama now.
He's a decent basketball
player. Yeah, he's a decent basketball player. And I think, that's the transfer portal era. Like a couple years, even just a couple years ago, Grant, not talking in literal time because then all these players would have been younger, but I'm saying like this team, if you just take it back in time 3 years, Grant doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
It's like the Mike Dom. He's Mike Dom, right? Yeah. Like, he's the preseason player of the year.
Where it's like, has this guy not graduated yet?
Right. Yeah. He's the preseason player of the year. He gets the, the Bison are now the prohibitive number one. He's getting the preseason player of the year, the first team all league. Now he and Bowden are both first team all league, and NDSU's getting all the first place votes. And it's like, this would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting to like see. I mean, the feeling going into the season is completely flipped. You have the pressure of being the top dog.
Right.
And now we discussed they're ranked 3 in the preseason for the league. And
getting a couple first place votes.
Yeah, and a little bit of that underdog comes in where it's Grant left. That doesn't mean anything for us. We're still going to go scrap and win basketball games.
Right. And I talked to Javis, and we'll have a cool little interview with Javis Miller. I caught him before practice and then watched that practice. And he just kind of said like the ball just moves more, and that's not anything against Grant. Like I promise you guys, NDSU basketball is not going to be better this season because Grant Nelson's gone. it's not the case. At the same time though, college basketball as a whole has really moved to a 4-round-1 game. And Grant was kind of special in the fact that he could go off the bounce and he could shoot and he could do a lot of things that 6'7" guys could do at 6'11".
Right.
With that said, you go back and watch their win at Portland, which was probably their most impressive win last season, other than just absolutely lambasting South Dakota State in the Summit League semis.
Beautiful.
That was a fun night. especially considering just the crowd and the energy and the, it was great.
It's the best feeling in sports.
Because, like, my God, there were so many people in blue there, and they were so mad. Anyway, where was I? I got lost in the glee of that evening.
Their most impressive wins.
Right, last season. Grant was unavailable. And, right. and that Portland team had just almost beat number one North Carolina and did beat, I think, Michigan State.
That Portland team was solid.
They were good.
Yeah.
And, you know, they go in there and you know, no Grant and kind of, like I said, play that four-round one ball with Andrew Morgan. I mean, that's been Bison basketball for a minute. You think of, like, the guys that have played that four position, A.J. Jacobson, not a big, you know, burly guy. He was 6'6", did his job, rebounded a little bit. Shot open threes off the pick and pop, defended his position. But even like the two really successful Summit League championship teams, they had Sam Griesel at the four.
Right.
You know, Vinny played one and Sam, who eventually became a point guard, but 6'6", rebounded his position, offensive rebounder, good passer, you know, kind of whatever. Well, we're going to find out who that player is. And instead of it being Grant, which, again, Grant's a great player, great kid. He's going to do amazing things at Alabama. He's going to make Bison fans proud for a long time, but whatever he does after this. But it's going to be a style of basketball that we've seen be successful. And I think Andrew Morgan's going to eat, and that's going to be fun to watch too.
Yeah, I think that's even, as we sit in the studio here, I look at the guy right in front of you, number five.
Hey, shout out.
Bison offense looked a little different when he was playing QB.
Yeah.
Because you have that talent to do it. And obviously, you have a talent like Grant. You transition a little bit to highlight him and let him, because he will win you basketball games.
Yeah.
Go do it. And now a guy like him leaves. All right, we can transition to maybe something we're a little more comfortable with.
And I tell you what, I mean, I think they're going to be very balanced. Bowden Skunberg is their first team all-leaguer, but like Bo is not the...
He's awesome to watch, by the way.
Yeah, he's so... I love that kid, man. We went to the Junior Bison Club event, and like he took pictures with James, and there's even like a picture, you've seen it on Facebook, of Berkeley in front of his locker.
It's awesome.
It's very, you know, very cool. We love all of our Bison Hoops family, but... yeah, check them out on Friday. I think they're going to be a very, very balanced group. Like, Bowden is not the 35 shots a game guy he was at Jamestown High. He's just not.
Right.
You know, he's going to D up. He's going to be part of it. But, you know, Damari can get a bucket. Tejavis can get a bucket. Bowden can get a bucket. Morgan can get going. And then, you know, even guys off the bench, like we've seen Jakari White have big offensive games. We know Lance Waddles can score. They might have to find a him.
Right.
But they're going to be a hard scouting report for the first 10 games of the year, because I would not know if I was going to game plan North Dakota State, I would not necessarily know off the top of my head who's going to take the most shots. And that was different last year.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that they can use to their advantage, where it's like, all right, we might not have a guy who's him 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But, hey, tonight you don't know who it's going to be.
Right,
hey,
right.
Good luck game planning that. That's very multiple, tough, balanced. They're going to be fun to watch. I'm actually going to try to get more in-depth and pay attention to some Bison hoops this year.
Love that. Love to hear it. Sources close to the program indicate Coach Richmond in studio next week.
Yeah, I thought I'd let you know that.
There we go. And as we mentioned, going to drop it off right now to a little Tejavis Miller interview.
All right, here with NDSU sophomore guard Tejavis Miller. Tejavis, how are you doing?
Good. How are you? Nice to be.
You know, I think the big thing everybody thinks about is you know, Grant not being here, right? I mean, that's. You guys bring back basically every other contributor. But one of your best games last year was at Portland, and Grant couldn't go. What do you think the team looks like, obviously, without a 6'11" unicorn at the post or at the number four spot? I mean, what have you guys kind of found? Obviously, no games yet, but through practice where it's like, okay, now I get my shot here, or well, this guy actually ends up being a little bit more productive. What's it been like?
Just basically us moving the ball, passing, like, connecting with each other. That's really the main thing, just us having a good connection with each other.
How about defensively, you know, the way he rebounded, the way that, you know, go back to even the Summit League win over South Dakota State, all those rebounds, all those change shots, stuff like that. Obviously, still got Morgan, still got Pedersen, still got guys that can play D, but if it is more of a four around one instead of kind of the two bigs, how much different is the way that you guys defend?
I'd say it's not much different. We still have the same gaps and stuff, same principles we had last year, so it's really the same. Just gotta stick to playing harder.
You guys, you know, obviously you and Damari had a ton of time together, right? I mean, you kind of came up together in the backcourt, but now you're sophomores, you're not freshmen anymore. You, Lance, Jakari, I mean, so many guys, Hostreiter, that got their first look last year. Have you seen kind of a big jump from anyone or even yourself? Like, are things slowing down? Are guys getting to their spots easier? How do you feel like kind of that group of guys that really got their first year last year has progressed?
I feel like they all progressed pretty good. Just the level of maturity that everybody has, they just went to another level. Just being able to show the different ways we play as far as last year, the different things we do, and then that's really about it.
How about the trip in Costa Rica? Was it?
Mm-hmm.
You were in a boot?
I was.
Okay,
I
sure,
was.
But that had to have been a cool experience either way. I mean, obviously, maybe you would have probably wanted to play, but just to kind of be with the squad, go do something like that, that had to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Just seeing how the guys connected for the first time all together. Guys playing together in Costa Rica was pretty cool. Just seeing them playing hard, we'd be at practice, nothing really changed, so that was pretty cool.
Last year, I can't remember the record, 2-9 or something like that, but I mean a murderer's row. You guys had a very young team, and it was a very aggressive schedule kind of put together. I don't know necessarily that you're going to analyze your schedule. It's not as tough this year, but what do you think going through that? Obviously, it propelled you guys to a Summit League championship appearance, but what do you think going through that, you guys even draw from now where it's okay, we've seen everything that Division I basketball can throw at us?
Yeah, just basically what you're saying, just seeing the different high levels that we play against. There's Kansas, just how good they are, and then us being able to play against them, giving them I feel like that'll help us.
How about having Damari? Damari, obviously a guy who, didn't have a chance to do much with you guys until he was basically just thrown in the fire. What's it been like to have Damari basically all summer?
He makes things a lot easier having him at the one. I don't have to really play the one. It's not really my favorite. So having him, his pace that he plays with, his speed makes things a lot easier. Harder for the defenders to guard him, and then they're going to be more focused on him for him to dish it on us and stuff.
When Damari comes off the floor, which might not be often, he might get the Lawrence Alexander treatment. You might not know who that is, but LA, I think, averaged 38 minutes a game his senior year. You took a lot of the backup point guard role last year. Who else is kind of looking towards that? Or if Damari does have to come off, or let's say he twists an ankle, he doesn't play for two games, who's kind of working in as that second point guard now?
The main one's Lance right now. Lance
okay.
And Damari. They really stepped up as a big part, just being the backup, coming in whenever Mari needs a break, just being able to control, and then them playing at a different pace than Mari does, at a slower pace, so that really helps too.
What does Lance kind of bring to that position? I think everybody first saw him, especially in the exhibition game, the first game last year, as a bucket getter. He has that offensive, but what does he kind of bring as a ball handler and a facilitator?
Just him being able to dribble the ball the way he does just makes things a lot easier. His passing is great too, and just his IQ is good.
All right, thanks, Javis.
Yep.
Want to thank Javis. Want to thank NDSU SID Wes Offerman.
Shout out.
We love Wes.
Best in the game.
Appreciate him setting that up for us. And let's dive into Western Illinois. Nice little game for TK Marshall.
Yeah.
TK did a good job. We've had some discussions. Our guy Jake Stack loves him some TK.
Yeah.
But just about working through contact. I think TK has always had pretty good vision, been able to make guys miss, but against Western, you saw a little bit more edge, especially down by the goal line. I liked kind of, what he was able to do through contact, excellent contact balance, and just he played a rock solid game and gave him a little burst.
Yeah, TK is fun to watch because I've noted it in our group chat a couple of times. The really good runners, technique wise, running the football, don't look like they're moving from the waist up. It's all lower half, and that's kind of what TK looked like, and that's how you bounce off of people. But I think it might have just been a mindset flip for him where it's I'm gonna go hunt the end zone. My assignment is what my assignment is, but how many times did he get in? Was it three?
Two for sure. Two that I remember. But
good. I love to see it because obviously off the field TK is just an awesome dude. And anytime you see those guys get success on the field, it's great. But the individual stuff, and I was really impressed
thrice.
With
thrice. Yeah, three times. He had a 38-yard bomb. That was That went from 38 to 45. My focus level might not have been super high at that point in the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, TK times three.
I love it.
Absolutely.
I was impressed with the entire running back room. I thought Barica had a great game.
Yep.
And then, you know, obviously a little bit of sprinkle of Tamarick.
Right.
But
and then your guy, John Gores.
Yeah, my guy. Anytime you can build that stable and really get it to go, and hey, you know, somebody who might be sneaking into that room a little more.
Raja, that was fun.
That was sweet.
They've been lining him up kind of all over the place, which I have enjoyed. You know, and just a player, you know, been in the program as long as he has, deep understanding of multiple positions. You know, we're talking about the F receiver, the slot position, the Z receiver.
Smart kid.
You know, and now really probably starting to take some time in the running back room, or at least understanding, okay, we have these six calls, and if they get called, I got to play some running back, and I understand my assignment here. And he has been really, really impressive. I guess a Wildcat quarterback. I didn't know that. I mean, I knew he carried the ball because I saw his high school stats. But kind of a Wildcat quarterback for Lakeville, and that Lakeville team was good.
Yeah.
Like, I think they had some Mostarts.
They had two of them, actually.
And, you know, Raja, and yeah, they had some dogs on that Lakeville team. Won a state championship, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Raja was impressive. Carson Williams was impressive. Kid that, I guess, coach said he played as a true freshman at Buffalo, and then NDSU transferred him in and redshirted him because he probably was able to play right away, as right. most of those guys are. But I think the volume of offense, and we've been told by, I don't know, Babbo, Ellison, Gindy, like all these guys, you know, kind of have told us, like, you... That is a lot of information for the tight end.
I'll, like, personal experience, besides the quarterback, I think they're the guys who have to know the most on the field, because they're listening to the offensive line calls and they're building their blocking combos off of what we're calling. Like,
and
they
have to constant with the shift trade motion,
the shift constant. shift trade motion, and then how all of the shift trade motion affects their routes on the back end or where they end up. It's like combining offensive line, receiver, and quarterback all in one position. And they, I mean, that's probably the reason. I don't think physically he wasn't ready to play and getting redshirted. It was probably just getting accustomed to, like, hey, it's not student body right, student body left.
Yeah, you got to take a lot in, I mean, from an information perspective. But I thought he really played well. Coach Entz named him specifically as somebody who played well. And then, you know, as I mentioned, the PFF guys loved him. So, yeah. You know, I'm going to maybe dive in on some Carson Williams just for fun. But I was impressed. And like I said, coach was impressed. And then the nerds were impressed. So everybody's impressed with Carson Williams.
And just more opportunity for him if Joe doesn't play this weekend. Really get to put some more good stuff on tape. And then that's a fast way to win more snaps throughout the year. We've seen that a million times at NDSU.
Absolutely. Kelt McCaslin, really fun. Number two overall guy on defense. And this is just kind of what we were talking about. And again, like you always feel like it's tough. You're ragging on guys or, you know, suggesting guys maybe shouldn't play. And, you know, that gets to be difficult. But when you're calling for young, talented guys to play, it's really more in that spirit, calling for young, talented guys to play. And I have loved McCaslin as a prospect. I know how much they enjoyed signing him. Then you start to hear the guys like Tutsi's the one that's always in my brain.
Yeah.
Kleiman wouldn't not talk about Tutsi even when Tutsi was redshirting. And it was just like, Chris, he's not even on the field. But like he would talk about Michael Tutsi. And McCaslin is maybe not to that level, but he is a guy that they have talked about and certainly was a guy. I don't know that any true freshman really played a huge role last year or a role at all, but McCaslin was always the one when it would get brought up, like, hey, do you have any young guys that might get a sniff? McCaslin was mentioned as, we've got four games with Kelton. We might check it out. I mean, checks out to me. And just, you know, you talk about bigger, stronger, faster. We watched a little tape before this. You saw it Staling, and we're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and some snap on the field.
And those are the bigger, stronger, faster athletes that we're talking about, and he didn't just play like a relative athletic score. He played like a football player, and he played well, and I that was fun to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of the discussion, even when I was like tweeting that we were doing good things on Saturday, I got a lot of the it's Western response.
Yeah, and it is Western.
I don't care. There's things no matter who, if they were playing, if it was a practice at NDSU and I saw what I saw on film, it's like, yeah, hey, I like that.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing for young guys is that instilling confidence in them, and there's no better way to do that than live bullets against an actual Division I football team and playing well.
Right.
So hopefully that just, you know, again, like we talked about with Carson, where it's like you bite by bite, how many snaps can you take away to get in?
Yeah.
And, you know, how much do we see him playing if we're in Frisco in 2 months?
Logan Kopp was awesome, man. Yeah. We watched a couple of snaps of him because, like, we had concerns, or I still have some concerns about that 5-on-5 stuff, you know, where NDSU gets split out either in 3-by-1 or 2-by-2, but no tight ends, right? And a back. And teams have had success over the last 4 years running out of that because a lot of times what NDSU will do is keep their two safeties high. Well, then it's just four linemen and a linebacker against five linemen and a back.
Yeah.
So you're outnumbered, and it means somebody's got to get off a block or somebody has to miss a block.
Yeah, it's a tough offense to defend because you're obviously thinking passing situation
right
in that formation. So you're obviously – you either need to have a dog that can play single high safety and just play center field and tackle anybody that gets past the first level, or you need to have Michael Tutsi who will come in and fit the box.
Right, and come downhill and just kill somebody. Right. And so with that not necessarily being in place, Kopp was really impressive as the single linebacker, whether it was just making, you know, beating a guard to a spot, kind of making sideline to sideline plays. He did a good job of we've talked about him not being the biggest guy. He's not small, but he's not the biggest guy.
Right.
And so, you know, for him to take on a 6'5", 310-pound guard in the chest is not on the menu.
He's not a thumper.
Right.
We can.
Right. But was very, very effective in what he was asked to do. Had the pick. I mean, just he continues to be right there. I think if you're going to talk about all Valley linebackers, I think he would be certainly NDSU's nominee, if you will. He's playing at that level.
And it kind of seems like he's getting to the point finally. Here's another cliche where the game is starting to slow down for him.
Yeah.
And like you said, we watched it on film where he's running the play for the guard.
Yeah.
And look, you don't have to defeat blocks if they can't block you.
Right. And that
you're
was
beating
that
him
was,
there.
You know, there was times where that certainly didn't work for James Kaser, but that was the James Kaser.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm a safety. I am a safety body playing Will. But if you can't touch me, you can't block me.
Right.
And that's the James Kaser. And Logan Kopp is a little bit bigger than that. And I think, you know, does have the ability to take on and shed a little bit more than a James. But I liked what I saw, especially, like I said, if teams are going to look on film, if I was running offense against the Bison, I would be in 10 personnel a lot. I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
And he did a good job, and so we gotta recognize that when it goes well.
And it's always fun to have a Mike that just kind of plays with their hair on fire too. Like you just like we saw him sprinting sideline to sideline, and that's a confidence thing. Even the pick, like making diving picks, and he's just really fun to watch. He's smart, plays with high energy, and he's playing really, really well right now.
Yep. All right, got a couple. Made my return, my triumphant return to the press conference. That was lots of fun. Could tell that Mr. Entz was excited to have me back. Got asked if I was coming out of retirement. I just said I'm guiding the youth. Our wonderful intern Blake Ingebretson was there, and I kind of, you know, I wanted to sort of show him the ropes, and then I just got back into normal. I got to ask questions mode, so I did. One of these actually wasn't my question. We'll start with the one though that was, because we had heard some rumblings, if you will. And, you know, I begged the question, do you give up 45 to UND? Does the old defensive coordinator stick his nose in there a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's fair. And so I just asked the question. I asked if Coach Entz had gotten more involved.
As Randy and Tyler have been here, and maybe the way things have gone a couple different times on defense, have you had the temptation or maybe even just gone ahead and been a little bit more hands-on with the defense this year than maybe in years past?
Probably more so of late, to be honest. I think when Coach, you know, I think in 2019 I had a lot of hands-on just because we had even more volume. We had greater numbers of new people my first year as head coach. you know, not that I didn't trust anyone, just wanted to make sure that we were using the same terminology and not straying too far from who we were.
All right. I don't even think that's, like, really I could see how that could be interpreted as whatever a damning
Yeah, shot at Petrino.
Yeah, and I don't think it is. I think that's a head coach doing what a head coach needs to do.
I agree. And I mean, the point that I kind of tried to make in asking the question was, like, Randy and Tyler have been here forever.
Right. What are you going to tell them?
That's kind of the, like, yeah, what are you going to tell? Like, what aspect, and maybe, you know, and obviously Coach Entz, I'm sure, has input in the offensive, whatever, but you're right. What are you going to tell them? What are you going to tell them to run? What are you, you know, I mean, not that he doesn't need to be involved, but I assure you, Coach Hedberg and Coach Roll can put together an offensive game plan.
Right.
With or without Mr. Entz.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, obviously the implication of that is, like, he's taking over the duties. It could be just as simple as something as he indicated where he's like, hey, let's simplify terminology a little bit, or let's cut this out. Like, don't really need to do this. Let's simplify everything. And you get results of what we saw of guys who are younger, even more inexperienced, and guys like Logan Kopp, where it's like, they look like they're playing football now. They're not thinking, they're playing football. And if that's, and I totally understand that if that was the case with Coach Petrino, where it's like, there's a lot on your shoulders being the defensive coordinator of the NDSU Bison. You want to try to, like, come and make your mark and put crazy stuff on film. Sometimes the best solution is the most simple one.
Well, and I mean, that's awesome. Like, hey, Coach, maybe instead of having 40 calls, let's have 20.
Right.
You know, let's just have our, let's just use the front side of the menu instead of the back. And let's run 6-7 things really well. And just kind of, you can work in a pressure here, pressure there. You can work in a disguise coverage here, but let's rock the bread and butter.
Yeah.
And you know, let's rush with 4 and cover with 7 and knock heads and rally to the ball and do all the, you know, do all the things that keep the cup and do all the things you're supposed to do. And maybe, like you said, maybe that simplification or just, you know, really implementing his terminology as he mentioned, making sure everybody's on the same page, everybody understands. But I mean, I'll freely admit this, Matt is a really, really good defensive football coach.
Yeah, right.
And has been for a long time.
I'd love to have him in my corner if I was a first year, not first year DC, but my first year at a new school. I'd 100%. Love to have that guy to lean on.
And so that's, you know, I don't think that's saying anything bad. And he mentioned 2019. Yeah, that's Bronny's first year as the defensive coordinator.
Coach Bron, good coach?
Yeah. I believe he is leading a Big Ten program currently. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. And I think, you know, if I saw what I saw against UND and I was a defensive-minded head coach, I would step in as well. So I don't see any problem with that.
I would have more concern if, like, they were scared of stepping on toes or facing criticism for, you know, starting that discourse. I think that's a good thing that it was – UND was obviously a wake-up call where it's like, hey, we need to fix some stuff, and it's going to take all hands on deck.
Yep. All right. Interesting discussion, if you will, about the depth chart.
I think Najee, Jalen Duffy are both pushing some people at the corner spot right now, being competitive. You know, Jalen Duffy's put on 15 pounds since he's been here in June and starting to, you know, physically show that he can handle the game. I think when he first got here, he was probably a little light, you know, but he's done a really good job of buying in to Coach Kramer and his staff. Jalen Crumby continues to, you know, get reps down with the ones and twos at just some different safety / nickel, trying to, you know, streamline things where if he were to get in the game, we could call it where it's he feels comfortable. Because, again, you're only as good as what your players can regurgitate on the field.
Regurgitate. All right.
A man of words.
Yeah. All right.
What the vocab.
But, you know, that's some stuff that we've been asking for, right? Yeah. You have Darius Givens is not somebody he named by name, but he's getting more reps. And he did talk about Darius at an earlier point in the press conference and talk about how important it was for him to really see, you know, 14, 17, 22, whatever snaps it was of live bullets, even, you know, it's Western. Yeah, well, it's somebody else in a different colored uniform. Right. That's why do you think the tune-up games are scheduled? And, yes, these are conference games, but, like, These are important, man.
They took advantage the way they were supposed to.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I'm ready to see Jakees Alexander. I'm ready to see Jalen Duffy. I'm ready to see Najee Nelson. And I'm not necessarily saying this to bag on JP and Shepard, but, like, A, JP is an absolute menace returning punts.
Right.
And B, like, they just haven't been locked down.
Right.
They're not Marcus Williams and CJ Smith. They're mm-hmm. they're not having that level of success where it's like, well, we just can't, because there have been corner tandems that did not come off the field.
Right.
Marcus Shepard right now and Jaden Price are not at that level. So if you got, you know, three-star guys, which they do. I mean, Duffy was a three-star. Jakees was a three-star. You know, Najee, I think, is one they think they stole, really.
Right.
And if these kids, and one thing that I've, you know, Dudzik told me this, and I really truly believe it, corner is the hardest position to play on the field athletically, period. You need the best athletes. You have to be the most discern, you know, you have to be the most discerning about who you'll actually put as an athlete at corner. But playbook-wise, it's not that much.
Right.
Mentally, it's not that much. You have to know stuff, but you don't have to know all the stuff.
And it's more of a mentality thing, too.
Yes.
You just have to be wired that way. And I think it's a win-win in the discussion he's talking about, because if there's good football players underneath the guys that are playing, that means they're getting better and we're going to see them.
Yeah.
Or if that competition breeds Shepard and JP playing better, that is also good for the Bison.
Also good for the Bison, yes. Okay, before we move on, what do we like? What I talked to you about this and said, you know, kind of, okay, what can you see as 38-point favorites? What could you see in this game that would sort of inform opinion on stuff moving forward, as opposed to, I didn't see anything, you idiot. You know, we're 40-point favorites. What, you know, they beat a bad team.
Sure.
Okay, so did you see anything that you did like? Anything that you do think might apply to SIU, SDSU, UNI, et cetera?
I think just the cleanliness and execution was really good for me to see. And you're not playing down to an opponent when Western comes in here. And they didn't.
No.
They put 50 on them.
Yep.
So that was really encouraging to me. And then, honestly, we can talk about it, whatever. We have spent a majority of this podcast talking about it. Seeing that depth starting to come up, where, like, when we played SDSU in Frisco last year, it was kind of like, we need some guys to start doing some stuff. And against Western, they show they're very capable to do so.
Yeah.
That excites me, because a lot of the times in the playoffs, that deep run really relies on
when
depth.
You lose a guy here, you lose a guy there.
Right.
And some years, you know, when they lost DeLuca and Menard in 2016, that ended the run.
Right.
Right. And then there have been years like where you had Josh Hayes and Marquise Bridges at corner, and you won a national championship.
Yeah.
Because even though they lost, I think it was Jalen Allison,
yes,
another Wimbush, I think was the other guy. Not that it didn't matter, but it didn't cost them the season. And you are talking about, yes, developing that depth.
And that's where I think, and you want to go back to the top 10 rankings conversation, I think that's where a lot of teams are built different than NDSU is, because we're understanding of that fact.
Yeah.
Of like, that's great, they can be really good in practice, but until I hear Coach Enns talk about how well they played on Saturdays,
yeah,
you know,
yep,
I'm concerned. But these young kids really came in against Western, and like you said, the bigger, faster, stronger thing, like, it looks like a different crop of kids that are out there right now.
For sure. I mean, like I said, McCaslin, Staling, big dudes.
Yeah.
Givens, my God. I mean, we were just watching one rep where Sam Young, and this is like the fourth consecutive podcast where I've said something that could be construed as negative.
Stop being mean to Sam Young.
I like Sam Young. But they're two high safeties, so they're like level with each other on the field.
Yeah.
And I know that on that play, Givens was the near safety to the camera, and Young was the far safety to the camera. But my God, did Darius Givens just look enormous. I mean, it was crazy. And Sam Young's probably 5'10", 210, whatever.
Sure.
And Givens is like 6'3". I mean, it's just, it's noticeable.
Big, rangy athletes.
Absolutely,
man.
I'm
excited.
Oh, you should be, or we should be. Okay. The presenting sponsor of this week's episode and all of football season long's episode of Bison Report Radio, the good people at Gateway Chevrolet. It's always truck month. I think specifically, though, this month, they've got Silverados and Colorados up there. I was just up there to get an oil change, and remember I said I was going to get an oil change, and yes. I did. Boy, they've got a lot of new vehicles. And I know that there was some, like, COVID-y production stuff where you saw a lot of empty car lots. Not the case.
Yeah.
Enormous used inventory, enormous new inventory, every trim level, every color, and they've always got phenomenal programs, and the salespeople treat you great. Gateway Chevrolet, right there on the frontage road on I-29.
I have to say something about the Chevrolet product.
Go ahead.
You know, obviously, truck month is great. I drive a truck. It's necessary up here. I took my father's Suburban down to Minneapolis.
Okay.
That might be the most comfortable vehicle a human can drive.
I'm saying.
It's like sitting on a pontoon on the highway. Can't beat that.
So I think, like, we, and now we're getting deep into the live read, I'll make sure that the people at Gateway, you know, give us a few more shekels or maybe one more free oil change.
Send a bill on my behalf.
Shout out. So I think we're kind of a Chevy family because, like, when you grow up in a small town, there's one dealership.
Sure.
So I grew up in Northwood, and there's Krabanoff Chevrolet. A lot of people in Northwood drove Chevys because that was the only new car dealer in town.
Right.
Our rival school, which is now our co-op school, Hatton.
Weird.
Small towns get your closest small town. It's like 1,000 years ago. Mayville and Portland were probably rivals,
right?
And then they became Mayport.
Yeah.
Hatton Northwood. You've probably only ever known as Hatton Northwood, but when I was a kid, we were the Northwood Trojans, and they were the Hatton Flyers. And because we were so close, that was our big rivalry game.
Sure.
Now they're, you know, anyway. Hatton had Hatton Ford. So everybody in Hatton drove a Ford. So maybe it was sort of predestined, and you know, folks do know that I have a relationship with the owners at Gateway, and you know, they're good folks. They were Grovers, et cetera, et cetera. But you're right, man. There's just nothing like that Suburban, Tahoe, Silverado ride.
Yeah, I don't even know how to describe it. It's so different than any other experience driving any other brand of vehicle. I drove your Silverado when we went to Frisco. We should do a podcast just talking about that trip. I don't think we really detailed everything that went on.
When we went to Frisco?
When we had to, our flight got canceled.
Right, I was like, we didn't drive to Texas. No, but we did drive to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I drove it back, and man, it is just, it's a luxury experience, say that.
It is. All right, into the Murray State preview. I did want to check in with you on this. Your experience kind of, I don't know, you maybe talked to guys after the game or maybe you had some buddies, you know, in conference or just whatever, but like your experience with other teams' first experience in the Dome. Obviously, you're talking about non-conference and playoff opponents mostly. Mm-hmm. This happens to be a conference game.
Yeah, and this is where you still rely on that home field advantage because when I was going to school, it was still pretty regular 17,000 plus attendance.
Yeah. I mean, they used to sell out every game. We can say that out loud. That did used to happen.
Right. And I think even without talking to people, you see the frustration. We've seen it with conference opponents that have been there 5 times in their career of how frustrated they get. And I don't really know if there's a way to get ready for it unless you have a dome yourself that you can practice in and pump that crowd noise in and, you know, really get really good at hand signals and stuff like that. Because it is a very, very hard place to go and execute your first time. And it's just a different beast than anything Murray State has ever seen. And I guess Louisville, stuff like that. I don't know how loud Louisville is, but I'd put it against the dome when it's really rocking. The fall starts, we might see plenty of that. You see the execution on the field in play after the snap. That's where I think some of the bigger stuff happens. You see, you know, busted routes because they misheard the quarterback in the huddle. It's all tied into the fans that show up. And I know we don't have a $300,000 50-50 to show up for this week, but it's again stuff like this. We have to welcome Murray State into the Missouri Valley.
2-5 squad. They smacked Presbyterian. I'm not even sure what division that is. And beat Indiana State by 2 at home. So that's a Valley win, mm-hmm. and we put respect on all Valley wins.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody can get anybody in the Valley.
31.5-point favorites. Sort of talked about that in the intro. So, you know, I think Western was 38.5. I mean, this should be a wide spread. And that's another game, again, to kind of develop depth and to play young guys and get some hits off Cam, put them on Cole, maybe start working in a few more offensive linemen.
Yeah.
I would like to see, you know, some of those younger defensive linemen get reps earlier in the game. I think maybe there's some guys in the defensive backfield and on the defense. I think they're pretty darn well set at what they're going to do at linebacker, especially if Julian's going to be out. I mean, they're going to play Wirtz and Kubitz at Mike. They're going to play Kopp until it's quote-unquote junk time. I mean, they're going to play Kopp until – they're not going to rotate out Kopp, period. Right. And they're not going to rotate out Oscar either. They're not going to rotate out Oscar until, you know, Julian comes back. So – That part I get, but I mean, there are some defensive linemen I'd like to see earlier in the game. Maybe some defensive backs I'd like to see earlier in the game.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And even, you know, it's 31.5 for the line gives you an indication of the disparity in skill level. It's not SDSU coming in this weekend, but they are a touchdown better, at least in Vegas's mind, better than Western.
Yep.
So you're seeing live bullets against better competition. And especially those guys on the D-line, they have a heck of a right tackle playing who, like, is borderline pro prospect here if he continues to play the way he's playing. But, again, it's you see the execution, you want to see that, but seeing the young guys, even if it's not for a competition reason of, hey, I'm going to go steal 10 snaps a game from the guy above me, you just gave the guy above you 10-snap break. And that's what makes a difference in the playoff run.
QB DJ Williams is their second highest graded guy on offense. Kind of a ball pusher, is only completing 56% of his passes, but he averages more than 10 yards per completion and 6.4 per attempt. If you get over 6 yards per attempt, you're obviously then more efficient passing the ball than you are running it. I mean, that's kind of the evolution of football. People now have sort of understood that if we're going to get 6 yards a throw and 4 yards a carry, while 4 yards a carry is good, it is not six.
Right.
And so he's good. He's a functional runner, 3.7 yards per. I'm sure a lot of sack yardage is taken out of that. But yeah, good player. Good, you know, to have your quarterback. We mentioned this with Western. We like their quarterback, Morrissey, plenty. Could not overcome kind of his surroundings, if you will.
Right.
I think DJ Williams has a little bit of that to a lesser degree. I mean, he is one of their best players, and that's how you sort of want your team structured. If you're going to have, you know, it is good to have a good player at quarterback. That's not, breaking any news there.
He's certainly he's not non-defunct in the game plan.
Right.
They are game planning for DJ Williams.
Yeah, DJ Jones is the tackle you mentioned, has not allowed a sack this season, including against Louisville. I think he's... To my knowledge or my understanding of the statistics, he has allowed one QB hit and like five pressures. I mean, he is.
That's not fluky stuff. He's a good player.
He's a good player. So be interesting to watch. You know, we talked about some of the younger defensive linemen. It'll be interesting to watch how they get pressure from that side. Or is it where they pick on the left tackle?
You know,
we'll see kind of how that goes on passing downs. Defensively, got a couple good players. I like Malachi Williams, the linebacker. Zaytik McGee is a turnover machine. He's a JUCO guy, but he's a safety, by the way. And the last game that he played, or the last game that we have stats from, is Indiana State. We did Googling. We did tweeting. We couldn't find, like, an injury. He's obviously hurt or suspended or something.
Right.
But
not playing football.
Right, not playing football. We don't know if he's going to be available, if he's not. But if he is available, good player.
Yeah.
So someone to watch, but still. 31.5-point favorites, so what do you want to see?
And I guess that was my bigger point, too, of you talk about them being better than Western. There's some context to them being 2-5 and the fact that every game besides that Louisville game has been really, really tight.
They're scoring again. And so, I mean, that's my big thing, right? And I don't mean to cut you off, but I do want to see this improved, allegedly, Bison defense, right? I mean, you want to feel good about what happened after the defensive debacle at UND. Now, they didn't score at Louisville, but this is an FBS game at Middle Tennessee. That's 14 is okay. Mm-hmm. Well, 30 against Indiana State. Okay, they only scored. What were we talking? So they scored 20. Okay, You misled me a little bit here.
Yeah, I did. I was thinking more of the Missouri State game, and even Southern Illinois, they're giving up more points, obviously, than they're scoring. They're losing football games. But a 27-6 loss to Southern Illinois indicates that there's definitely life to this team. Maybe they just haven't quite figured out how to win football
games. Yeah, because 27-6, any way you slice it, is at least competitive.
28-24 to Missouri State, who is not a great football team, but they're not a basement dweller. So, like, maybe that's just something where the experience of playing Missouri Valley football, Murray State might flip that schedule and that record in a couple of years.
Yeah, Missouri State, 3-4 with a loss at a pretty game KU squad. I mean, they're fine, So, yeah, I'm with you there.
I wasn't saying they're an offensive juggernaut, but they're playing teams tough.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't really get that indication from the line or their record.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's a good sharpen up game, and that, I guess, will lead into what I want to see of, hey, you can't look past these guys, but there is a rather large game coming next Saturday. Yeah. So get everything in order. See who can step up and make some plays for this team of guys that we haven't seen yet this year. I loved the simplification of the defense. And again, for me, it's just execution. I don't want to see dumb procedural penalties. I don't want to see missed tackles. Just clean, good football. And the biggest thing I don't want to see is no more guys hurt after this week.
Yeah.
Need everybody in the stable for what's coming.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. The offense is definitely not the side of ball I'm going to be paying attention to. Because you look at this. And, they score 41, then 0, 14, 30, whatever.
Right.
But defensively, they're not great. I mean, that side of the ball is their problem. Yeah. You give up 28 to Missouri State. You give up 27 to SIU, 38 to USD, 28 to Indiana State, 35 to Middle Tennessee, and 56 to Louisville.
Right.
That's a lot. Okay.
Yeah.
So I expect 50 out of the offense because that's the kind of offense they are this year. I do want to see. I'd like to see under 14. I'd like to see under 14. So I'm going to give that. I'm going to give 51-10 as my score prediction. What do you got?
I'm going to go 42-7. I think they get one at the end.
Okay. All right. Want to thank Zach for coming on in. Want to thank Big Deck Barbecue. Want to thank the good folks at Gateway Chevrolet. And I want to thank all you guys for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody, and go Bison.